How do we wage a society-wide struggle for truth, science, and evidence-based epistemology?
Trump's criminal COVID-19 conduct wasn't only about Trump's malignant narcissism.
He knew what this was. He knew how deadly it was. And yet he did absolutely nothing.
The absurdity of Trump's blathering accomplishes a purpose, a fascist purpose.
Welcome to episode 34 of Inside Without Now, a podcast brought to you by volunteers with Refuse Fascism. I'm Sam Goldman, one of those volunteers and host of the show. Today, we're sharing COVID, a case study with life and death stakes, science, epistemology, conspiracy, and fascism. This panel discussion presented by Refuse Fascism and the Revolution Nothing Less show, originally streamed Wednesday, December 16th. This forum features Coco Das, member of the National Editorial Board for Refuse Fascism, Dr. Philip Rice, emergency medical physician, Paul Street, historian, author, and member of the National Editorial Board for Refuse Fascism, and Andy Z, host of the RNL show and co-initiator of Refuse Fascism.
Tonight, we're going to examine the causes and implications of a terrifying situation. The U.S. has the highest number of COVID-19 cases in the world and the highest number of deaths, recently surpassing 300,000. This has occurred under a science-hating, genocidally racist, lunatic fascist regime, with thousands more projected to die before Trump leaves office. The Trump-Pence regime, the Republican fascists, and their rabid base spread COVID as a matter of liberty, the liberty to infect and kill others. Trump recovered from COVID with the best healthcare in the world, and then told his overwhelmingly white followers at a campaign rally in Minnesota that they have quote unquote good genes. The regime's COVID response concentrates many of the features of this fascist program: white supremacy, hatred of foreigners, a theocratic Christian fascism, and unhinged conspiracy theories. How did we get to this point? Why have we tolerated a regime that has facilitated the deaths of 300,000 disproportionately black and brown people? Is this deliberate mass murder, or is it collateral damage in service of a fascist and fundamentalist worldview? How do we wage a society-wide struggle for truth, science, and evidence-based epistemology? After my opening remarks, you're going to hear provocative presentations from our panel, and then we're going to open it up for some discussion, and we expect to do all this in about 2 hours. Tonight, you're going to hear from Paul Street, historian and author of Hollow Resistance: Obama, Trump, and the Politics of Appeasement. He is a member of the editorial board of refusefascism.org and a frequent contributor to Counterpunch. Dr. Phil Rice is a leading physician of emergency medicine in Salem, Massachusetts. And Andy Z, host of the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, co-initiator of refusefascism.org and spokesperson for Revolution Books. My name is Coco Das, and I'm a writer and also a member of the editorial board of refusefascism.org. About a week ago, Diana Lachiondo, a commissioner in Ada County, Idaho, abruptly left in tears a virtual meeting to discuss a mask mandate. The reason? Her 12 and 8-year-old son were home alone, terrified because protesters were outside banging on the window, screaming, blowing air horns, calling their mother a tyrant for advocating a mask mandate, and amplifying sound clips from the movie Scarface. These people were armed and should not really be called protesters, as they have no legitimate grievance. This was a mom threatening innocent people with violence, fighting for nothing more than the right to spread disease, the right to infect and endanger their neighbors, the right to reject science, truth, and any notion of a common good. Later, Lachiando wrote in a Facebook post, though I was born and raised in Idaho and have chosen to raise my own family here, I increasingly don't recognize this place. There is an ugliness and cruelty in our national rhetoric that is reaching a fever pitch here at home, and that should worry us all. On Saturday, thousands of Trump supporters, including the Proud Boys and other white supremacist, anti-Semitic, Nazi militia groups, converged on DC for the second time in a month to rally for their president under the fiction of a stolen election, which Trump and his fascist allies have been bludgeoning the public with through outrageous lies and conspiracy theories, baseless lawsuits, threats against Republicans who wouldn't do his bidding, and trumpet calls to his tough people, who rampaged through the streets that night, attacking people, vandalizing Black churches, and burning Black Lives Matter banners, conjuring images of KKK cross burnings and Hitler stormtroopers smashing the windows of Jewish neighborhoods. And whose votes are they saying have stolen the election from Trump? The votes of Black people in the urban areas of swing states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Georgia. Trump and his fascist backers are gnashing their white supremacist teeth, hardly subtle about their message. If only white people voted, Trump won by a landslide. On Monday, the Electoral College confirmed Biden's victory, though Trump's lies, threats, and attempted coup have not stopped. Fascists in and out of government will not stop fighting to re-seize power and consolidate fascist rule. If Biden is, as looks likely, sworn in as president on Inauguration Day, then we have succeeded in voting a fascist out of power. Not an easy feat, but we have not and cannot simply vote out fascism. It has been advanced through all levels of government, through the armed forces of the police, ICE, Border Patrol, and the military, and it has seized initiative in the streets. To stop this vicious American fascism that imperils the whole world, we must heed the words of the great abolitionist Frederick Douglass. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. Power concedes nothing without a demand. We must demand an end to the death, lies, and fascism with a nonviolent mass movement that stands up for our values, respect for science, truth, diversity, and a love for humanity. We have to say in the public square, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And our first speaker is Paul Street, author of Hollow Resistance, Obama, Trump, and the Politics of Appeasement, and my colleague on the editorial board of refusefascism.org. Welcome, Paul. How are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. Thanks, Coco.
We're eager to hear from you.
All right. Very good. Here we go. The COVID pandemic, COVID-19 pandemic, as it has played out in its favored country, the United States of America, is a tragedy. It will soon have claimed the lives of more than one in every 1,000 Americans. Think about that. But it is also a fascism, crime rooted in this nation's multiple, overlapping, and mutually reinforcing structures, institutions, policies, and ideologies of inequality and oppression. It is an epitome of the failed state spiritual death and fascism that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said would befall this nation if it did not move off of what he called the triple evils that are interrelated: capitalism, racism, and imperialism, militarism. It is a crime of global capitalism, the rapacious and parasitic system that digs up zoonotic viruses from its ever-expanding geographical frontier and then sends those viruses around the world in the flash of an eye. Capitalism in its extreme U.S. form compels millions of vulnerable Americans to work without adequate virus protection or else go without money for purchasing life's necessities. It is a system that denies millions of Americans adequate health care and that disincentivizes and prevented the provision and production of medical supplies, beds, personnel, and equipment to meet a pandemic that medical science and public health experts had been warning about for many years. It is an anarchic, competitive system that absurdly complicates medical production and distribution, and that renders hundreds of millions of Americans vulnerable to terrible outcomes by poisoning their bodies, air, water, and soil, toxic food, and toxic chemicals. COVID is a crime of American racism, which forces tens of millions of non-white Americans to live in overcrowded residences and communities without access to healthy food, medical care, and green space. Virulent American racism, which is as old as the Republic itself, concentrates millions of impoverished Black, Brown, and Red people into jails, prisons, detention centers, reservations, concentration camps that have proven to be COVID-19 breeding grounds and petri dishes. Racism concentrates non-white people in the most vulnerable jobs, in packing house kill floors in Iowa and in Nebraska, and working as nursing home orderlies across the nation. COVID-19 is a crime of American imperialism, which, among other things, steals resources from public health and medicine, taking money, skills, and personnel that should be invested in healing, and pouring all of that instead into a giant military death state that accounts for more than 40% of global war spending. If I had more time, and I don't, I'd talk about how COVID-19 is a crime of American sexism, of American individualism, of American federalism, of American nativism, of American right-wing evangelical Christianity, and of American anti-intellectualism, and even, ask me about this later, of American electoralism. But I want to get to the more central and more immediate culpability of Trumpism, fascism. I believe my fellow presenter tonight, Dr. Phil Rice, is going to get into some of the specifics on what was scientifically and medically necessary and how the Trump regime thwarted all of that in absolutely disastrous and despicable ways that have had made the world's so-called greatest country into a sanctuary nation for COVID-19, giving us more than a fifth of the world's COVID cases in a nation that accounts for less than a 20th of the global population. But my thing is the why of that, the why of that criminal mass murderous incompetence. And here I think it's a good place to set down a marker that sets Refuse Fascism and its allies a bit apart from the mainstream explanation. The mainstream standard common sense explanation of why Trump screwed up so badly on COVID-19, which, by the way, is written all over the front page New York Times piece today about how the Trump administration crushed the Center for Disease Control's COVID response capacity. But as far as I can tell, the mainstream common sense explanation is that Trump didn't want to do or say anything that might undercut the economic growth that he expected to ride to re-election this year. That's the main story that I expect to go into the liberal history textbooks that roll off the academic presses next year. And the problem with that conventional explanation is not that it's wrong. That's a huge part of it, absolutely significant and central part of it. My sense, however, is that it was much worse than just that. And that alone was pretty awful, pretty criminal, pretty bad. My sense is that when the full story comes out, we or those of us willing to look are going to see that Trump's criminal COVID-19 conduct, we started calling it COVID-45, to be honest with you, this summer, that his criminal COVID conduct wasn't only about Trump's malignant narcissism and selfishness and electoral calculations, but was also about his and Stephen Miller and Tucker Carlson and the rest of the whole Republic fascist empire's malignant fascism. And I think we'll learn that it was related to each of the following nine fascistic characteristics of the Trump-Pence regime. One, an eliminationist neo-McCarthyite desire to paint out the other major capitalist party as a totalitarian socialist enemy of personal freedom and supposedly glorious, wonderful capitalism. Two, white supremacist satisfaction with a virus that was disproportionately killing off people of color. Three, a related social Darwinian and even eugenicist comfort with COVID's disastrous impact on the aged and on the infirm, on the old and the sick, the surplus people that the Nazis considered, quote unquote, useless eaters. 4, an initial eliminationist calculation that the virus would mainly target cities controlled by the other major capitalist party, the disproportionately non-white, blue metropolitan urban zones of the country. 5, a sexist, hyper-masculine sense that masks and social distancing are signs of effeminate weakness and fear, not manly. 6, a passionate hostility to science. It is particularly pronounced in American-style fascism because of the special strength of evangelical Christianity in the American right. 7, a personality cult built up around dear leader, stable genius Donald Trump, and a related sense that his instincts and the power of his will trumped any competitive claim to authority on the part of mere scientists and public health professionals. 8, the core fascist drive to purge all officials who are perceived as disloyal. And many folks in the bureaucracy just had too many loyalties to their own professions and their own scientific background to not get purged by Trump, not get crushed by Trump. 9, the continuing but fascism intensifying war of the right, not on the state per se. That's an illusion. The claims that the right wing is anti-government are false. Their war not on the state per se, but on the left hand of the state. That is, on any parts of government that serve the broad majority of the population and social democracy and public health and the common good. I want to conclude with an irony. And this is actually something I wrote myself at some point in Counterpunch in the last few weeks. I remember penning a paragraph, writing a paragraph to this effect of this fascist SOB, this fascistic regime that separated children at the border, that put kids in cages, that set up concentration camps, that tore up every environmental regulation, everything, all the things we didn't get impeached for. And just go through the list. We could stay here for 3 hours. All the worst sins and transgressions of the Trump regime probably would, this fascist regime probably would have got a second term, but for COVID, right? And I think that's true. The exit polling data I've seen on that really tells me that COVID really undid. If it wouldn't have given Trump an out-and-out electoral victory, the election would have been close enough for them to actually credibly have pulled off a coup and pulled off a steal. But there's a problem with this narrative, too. First one is COVID wasn't some outside externality or historical contingency that came out of nowhere and undid Trump. He blew COVID up. He needs to own this thing. That's why we called him COVID 45. He turned the United States into COVID's top most favored nation in the world. And second of all, he did that because of the fascism. Not exclusively because of the fascism. A lot of things went into play in this. Capitalism is huge, but he did this largely because of the capitalism. I do want to finish off with informal, just shout out to Refuse Fascism. This aftermath, even as much as the regime itself, is living proof the Refuse Fascism and its allies had it correct. This is exactly how you would expect a fascist regime to respond to the loss of an election. This line that I'm hearing in intellectual circles that, well, the aftermath of the loss proves that we were crying wolf and we were just raising alarms that we shouldn't have been and that we were hysterical. Look at the behavior since this regime. And look at the conduct. It's clearly not going away anytime soon. And look at our slogan. Out now. It was the right slogan, and it is still the right slogan. We are losing a 9/11 and a Pearl Harbor quantity of people every goddamn day in this country. This regime should be forced out immediately. It's doing everything it can to undermine a safe public health transition to the next government. It's criminal, it's profoundly transgressive, and it is fascist. I still say Trump, Pence, out now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Thank you for that long view and a very thorough investigation into the various factors that contributed to this. And I think some of the things that you did not get to, I think we will get to in the discussion, I hope. Next, we're going to hear from Dr. Phil Rice. Dr. Phil Rice was in the emergency room all day today and then braved a snowstorm up in Massachusetts, drove for an hour to get home and join us. So I'm very happy that you're safe home and that you could be with us tonight. How are you doing after your long day?
Well, I'm doing all right.
Great. So I know that our audience is eager to hear from you, especially as a frontline worker who has been healing and dealing with COVID-19 patients, and you also recovered from COVID yourself. So I'm going to hand it over to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me to talk. I wanted to kind of really speak about the two aspects of this disease that are basically impacted by both capitalism in general, as well as by this fascist regime. And they intersect in many ways. This disease, as it first was unfolding, we as scientists and as physicians were communicating with other physicians around the world. There were different websites and different apps that we used to kind of exchange ideas and thinking. It was really a beautiful collage of international cooperation to fight a common enemy. And then all of a sudden, we saw various countries, including this country in particular, all of a sudden try and stymie all that. Everything became either an American thing or an Italian thing. It truly was causing rebellion amongst all the different scientists that were fighting against this disease, because we recognize this disease is a zoonotic disease, one that doesn't really care about whether you're, you know, a mammal or a bird, but has its bullseye on all human beings. And it doesn't matter what country you're from, and it doesn't actually care. And it will infect and kill at will if you do not prepare for this pandemic. So in that light, I think that some of the unbelievable moves that were done to stymie this really smacked of the fascism that Trump represents. His backing out of the WHO was truly, that was just the icing on the cake. His defunding of the council in the White House that was preparing for pandemics and other assaults that may come our way, defunding it and putting his cronies in at in different levels of the CDC and the FDA, all these things were things that really strangled the ability of several different things to occur. So the first thing in terms of preparing for a pandemic is to try to prepare to stop the disease before it spreads. He had time. And this is one of the biggest and most, you know, damning things, is that he knew what this was. He knew how deadly it was. And yet he did absolutely nothing. He downplayed it. And this was truly criminal, to have this knowledge and not put it and have at your fingertips the ability to mitigate this and to do absolutely nothing on purpose. So that's part of the first thing. And I think part of that had to do with this whole fascist sense of having to control the truth. And there's an old saying, if you take away truth, you can't speak truth to power. And when you've done that, all that's left is power. And that's what he wants. So I think that that explicit downplaying and really seeing the effects of that nationalism on what it did to our ability to figure out where this virus was. Because without testing, and everybody remembers when we were trying to get testing, if you don't know where the virus is, how can you mitigate? How can you stop the spread? You can't. You can't quarantine. You can't do any of that unless you have testing. The WHO offered us a test back way back in early February and said, this is the test we're using throughout the world. And they said, no, we want an American test. And the American test ended up taking close to 8 weeks after that to get out and to be used. And even then, in woefully pitiful small amounts, so that we couldn't really do the type of testing that was necessary in order to figure out where the virus was and how to mitigate its effects. Meanwhile, it was ravaging the Northeast at that time in early spring. And just like this thing about this fascist extolling of the heartland while decrying the squalor of the urban area, that led to Trump saying, you know, well, they ought to quarantine, you know, New York City. The hell with them. You know, he, in fact, decided to move out, move to Mar-a-Lago, you know, et cetera. This is kind of like classic fascist appeal to the heartland, his social base or his fascist base. So the second thing you have to do is you need to lead the communications efforts and get out the word when outbreaks do occur. And basically all you heard was, this will go away. You didn't hear anything about where this virus is. You didn't hear anything about the steps you needed to take in order to mitigate the virus's effects. What you heard was, go ahead and ignore this, this won't hurt you, in the midst of the fact that thousands of people were dying. And that was actually thousands just in one city. And to think that that wasn't going to come to your city was just happy talk. So I think that this in and of itself is clear evidence that this guy really, really is a criminal in all respects. And I get the chance to talk to you all, but I know my colleagues who would love to tell you the moral trauma that they've experienced knowing that the person in front of them on that stretcher is dying because it could have been avoided had the right things been done. And now they're in front of us, can't breathe. We're determining whether they need a tube in their lungs or not. And all because of what? Because of this guy, this fascist fool. So I think that there are a bunch of things that we need to look at in terms of both the fascism, but also what capitalism just does in and of itself. I think that many of the things that you need to do from a public health stance have to rely upon mitigation and quickly enact policies and strategies that are going to stop the spread and save lives. And instead, what did you see? Over and over again, what was his message? His message was, let me have a MAGA rally where I'm going to display all the elements that you don't want to do in order to stop us and mitigate the spread of the virus. I'm going to have thousands at a rally, no mask, no social distancing, screaming their lungs out. What message does this give to anybody? What message does this give to the people of the world? Because we're not just talking about Americans, even though we live in this country. We're talking about the people of the world. This message is that it's a fascist message, that this virus, we can defeat it without science. We can defeat it by our gut instincts. We don't need to listen to pointy-headed intellectuals. And this is classic for a fascist idiot. He wants to show how powerful and how macho he is and how tough he is, how he rips off the mask when he gets back to the White House after he's had the best and most advanced treatments that anybody could find anywhere, and many of which I still can't order or can't give to my own patients because they're on short supply, and they're actually, people may not know this, but there are lotteries to actually determine who gets some of these drugs, these infusions, the new BAM infusion. You have to get in a lottery to be, because there's not enough for it to go around. But he got it. And then after he gets this and a bunch of other things, all of a sudden he's going to come out big and strong and say that everybody, you know, this is nothing to fear. We can beat this. Lastly, I want to really hit on, and I'm hoping that we do get into a discussion about truth and the epistemology and that sort of stuff. I won't speak about it now, but early on, we kind of thought that we saw the disparities in this disease, where Black and Hispanic and Native American people were dying at much larger numbers, in much larger numbers than our white fellow Americans. And we were kind of looking at all sorts of things and trying to explain this. And initially we said, well, it's because of, you know, the exposure to hypertension and the other risk factors that Black and Latino Americans may suffer because of the way the system treats them, et cetera, and how they have to live. But then over the past few months, we decided to look at some of the data. What the data shows is even more damning. And what the data shows is that the case fatality rate among Black, white, Hispanics is identical. And what that means is it's not in the genes. What it means is that it's all about the exposure. It's all about where people live. It has nothing to do with genes. The households are more crowded. Many people work jobs that require frequent contact with others, and they rely on public transportation. The toll on Black and Hispanic Americans could easily have been ameliorated in advance of the pandemic by a less threadbare and cruel approach to social welfare and healthcare in this country. In the meantime, they're trying to get rid of and throw people off their healthcare by the millions. My colleagues in France and Italy were calling me saying, what is wrong with your country? First of all, we were worried about you because, at least in France, we have a national healthcare system where we can strategize where to put resources, how to move resources. My Italian buddy in Milan said the same thing. How are you guys going to do that? You guys don't even have a coherent system within one city, much less the whole country. And then what was Trump's response? Well, states, figure it out yourself. It's not my responsibility to figure this out. So when I talk about this moral trauma, what I'm talking about is that, and I think about what could we have done if we lived under a different system? Could we have protected citizens from risky work situations by providing some sort of way for them to stay home? And people said, well, geez, you gave the subsidies to the airlines and you gave them to the cruise ships, $40 billion and $60 billion apiece, and yet you couldn't help supply, you know, safety for the basic masses? Seems kind of odd, you know, but it's an indictment of the system. So the fact that people died in the same case fatality rate tells you that it's how people live and where people live and the conditions that they live, that's what killed them more than anything else. So yes, Trump had a whole list of fascist approaches to dealing with the pandemic, forcing scientists to defend their research and why they did that research, and then trying to control the message that they were trying to put out as the result of their research, preventing Fauci from even testifying in the House of Representatives. I think that blocking the dissemination from the MMWR, from the FDA and the CDC, that's made a lot of my colleagues say, geez, here's the new magazines. Can we trust this? Because we know it's coming from the government. How many fingers have the politicians had in this message? And then we have to dissect it. Whereas before, we could rely upon this pretty easily. And then I think that in terms of the nationalism and the continued nationalism, instead of the cooperation in the rest of the world, is really an indictment of all that we've seen. And we couldn't have the Trump-Pence regime leave soon enough. They've had this hand holding back everybody, trying to take care of patients, trying to control this virus, and we can control it. Now they have a problem. They've denigrated the science so much. How are they going to get people vaccinated? Who's going to believe the vaccination actually works? How are they going to do this now? Now you're going to go backtracking on this? There's been no effort to deal with the question of the effectiveness of the vaccine and why the vaccine may work. Because COVID is an RNA virus. And the vaccine that we currently are looking at takes a snippet that codes for a certain protein. It injects it into you. It's not the virus itself. It's just a snippet that actually codes for the protein. That's called an mRNA. You have lots of mRNA. That's how all your protein gets produced. That mRNA goes through something in the cell called the ribosome, and that ribosome spits out a protein. And that mRNA that went through it gets degraded and reused. Well, that protein is a foreign protein. Your body begins to find that protein in its bloodstream, and it forms antibodies to it. Your T lymphocytes, which are part of your immune system, start to recognize it and form memory about it. That's how this particular vaccine works. It's a novel one. We've never used it before, but it's the first time we've never injected an attenuated virus or a live virus in order to achieve immunity. The virus that's being used in the AstraZeneca trial in England, that's an attenuated adenovirus. And it's had its gonads removed, so it can't replicate inside you. But it, too, delivers the mRNA of the coronavirus. And that's how it produces its immunity. And there are other different ways to produce immunity. I will close by saying that we have a long way to go. We're going to see a lot more deaths because of what's happened. They've been unnecessary deaths. Do not let anybody tell you differently. This could have been avoided. And I'll end there.
Thank you, Phil. I think, one, it's very moving to hear you talk about how the scientific community, you know, across borders really went to work on trying to solve this problem and how quickly that was thwarted and sabotaged by this nationalism and pettiness and individualism that was like so concentrated in this regime. And the data about the death rates among white, black, and Latino people. This is information that people so badly need, and I'm really glad that you were able to be here with us, and I'm excited to get into some of the discussion on these points later. Our next speaker is Andy Z, host of the Revolution Nothing Less show, and also a colleague of mine at Refuse Fascism. Welcome, Andy. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you, Coco?
I'm okay.
All right. Well, we're all of us are colleagues because Paul is on the editorial board of Refuse Fascism, and Dr. Phil Rice, besides somebody I've known for many years, is one of the first guests on the Revolution Nothing Less show, and we beat the rest of the media by almost 6 weeks in his report on the benefits of wearing masks, not just to protect oneself, but to protect others. So you heard it first here at the RNL show. So anyway, I'm glad to be with all of you. Okay, so all of you, my co-panelists, have presented really compelling evidence of the criminal rejection and the outright opposition to science by the Trump-Pence regime. This regime's electoral defeat has focused up in a profound way how far detached from reality they actually are. Not only were the lawsuits filed by a demented Rudy Giuliani having no evidence, but literally crazy conspiracy QAnon theories were put forward to explain the imagined election theft. QAnon is a shadowy internet super spreader of fascist lunatic theories, such as that the Democratic Party is in reality a child kidnapping operation organized around capturing children to literally suck their blood. And after this election, we now have QAnon spouters who ran on, won, and will represent the Republic Fascist Party of Trump and Pence in Congress. Lunacy like this, when laughed at and shrugged off, masks the danger to humanity that exists when a huge section of America is completely unhinged from reality and who fervently believe their alternate fact-free reality as morally superior and existential for their lives. And this destruction of truth is a key factor in the forging of a fascist base, a fascist leader, and a fascist form of rule. We've lived it for 4 years, and it's been metastasizing for 40. Trump and Pence will likely be out soon, yet even as they are not yet gone, they can do enormous harm up until they no longer have their hands on the weapons of state power. But even out of power, this fascist danger will remain. So both Paul Street and Dr. Phil Rice have brought telling evidence that the Trump-Pence fascist regime's refusal to take and foster a scientific approach to the COVID virus has meant that the scientists, the medical researchers, and the frontline health workers, as well as the broad masses of people whose role in adopting safe practices to slow the spread of the infection was and still is decisive to slow the it's still decisive until the majority of people here and around the world are inoculated with this vaccine, with a safe and effective vaccine, and that this has led to an appalling criminal number of unnecessary death and disease. But I want to begin this talk by bringing in some additional evidence to the discussion. So we're just going to play a very brief video.
When we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that, too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning, because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number of the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me. It's going to disappear. One day it's like a miracle. It will disappear. Yes. And from our shores, it could get worse before it gets better. It could maybe go away. We'll see what happens.
So look, we laugh at this, especially at Sarah Cooper's hilarious mouthing of Trump's insanity. But this should be the door to a stark confrontation with the horror show that this ignoramus, this psychopath, this fascist has brought down on humanity. The absurdity of Trump's blathering accomplishes a purpose, a fascist purpose, the effect of which is potentially even deadlier than the cost in death and debilitating illness, because it destroys any sense of what is real and what is not, and how to determine what is true, without which people are susceptible to being manipulated, including to commit great crimes. And such buffoonery entertains the fascist base, who relish the fascist leader's irreverence and feel validated in their resentment and their desire for revenge against those they have been taught to feel are taking from or looking down on them. But at the same time, the buffoonery captivates while it blinds liberals and progressives to confronting the enormity and the essence of what is going on, which is the fight at the top of society for a fascist form of rule, the shredding of all pretense of democracy, of a more blatant form of dictatorship of the capitalist system by the leader of the fascist party, and the forging of a different coherent set of values, of an amalgam of open white supremacy, patriarchy, and xenophobia, cohered with the mythology and the program of America First, undergirded by a fundamentalist Christian theocracy. I said this has been 4 years and 40 years. 40 years ago, in response to changes in the world and the risings of the 1960s, and what were resulting concessions to those struggles, resulting in even greater recognition of and inclusion of Black people, Latinos, Chicanos, women, and the gay rights movement. And after President Nixon was forced to resign, this hard right conservative movement coalesced behind Ronald Reagan. Just let me clarify this, the movements of the 60s was not a hard right conservative movement. The hard right conservative movement is what was being rebelled against in the 60s. But then after Nixon was forced to resign, that movement regrouped and coalesced behind Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan put forth a messianic mythology of America as a shining city on a hill to prepare for an actual war against the then Soviet Union, and at the same time to wage a domestic war on these civil rights gains. A Republican coalition was forged with a strand of biblically literalist Christian evangelical movements to forge a base of what has become a Christian fascist movement, which reached power in 2016 through the unholy union of Donald Trump and Mike Pence. And this has become the core of the organized base of the Trump-Pence regime. These forces have been trained and forged in a belief system that is completely and dangerously disconnected from actual reality. This is a movement with a large section who believe in end times, which means they believe that they, the faithful, will be raptured, magically transported up to heaven, and thus nothing else matters. To hell with, quite literally, the environment, the danger of nuclear war, and all the people who they regard as less than or other than human, who they would just as soon see eliminated. And this movement has coexisted with a whole culture and media that has been training millions and millions of people in a mode of thinking of what benefits us, what benefits me is true because we want it to be so, with no criteria of actual evidence. This way of thinking, what benefits me, finds expression in their taking the very American concept of the absolute freedom of the individual, which is an undesirable impossibility in any case, as the greatest good. The concept of the absolute freedom of each person as the greatest good, again, an undesirable impossibility. We are living and dying with this in the morally sick and actual sickening spread of the virus in their refusal to wear masks expresses my right to be an asshole trumps your right to live, especially so if you're a Latino, Black, or Native American. And this fascist belief system is buttressed by twin pillars of American chauvinism that refuses to look at the history and the present-day reality of the United States, which has put this country in the vampire position of actually sucking the lifeblood of the rest of the world. The children who are digging in toxic conditions for precious metals for our cell phones in the Congo, or women risking their lives in the perilous garment shops of Bangladesh. Humanity whose lives and labor are being poured into the wealth of America and its imperialist allies and rivals. And buttressing this is an epistemology in which facts are subordinated to their desire to benefit themselves and take revenge upon those whom they believe stand in the way of their further gorging. But wait, we also have to look at the epistemology, which is the way of thinking, of the progressive and liberal strata. All those who've been outraged at the Trump-Pence regime, but who over 4 years overwhelmingly would not recognize or acknowledge what this regime actually is, a fascist regime with dire consequences for humanity here and around the world, and who up to this moment have refused to not only recognize and name this fascism, but to act against it in the only way it could really be rocked back on its heels by getting out in the streets and sustained nonviolent protests. Well, I know that these decent people, outraged by the bigotry of the Trumpites, may be made uncomfortable by confronting the reality that their complacency and putting their faith in the institutions and normal political processes, particularly the Democratic Party, is also based on the reality of living atop the food chain of capitalism imperialism in the U.S. Last April, the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian wrote a piece titled Conspiracy Theories, Fascist Certitude, Liberal Paralysis, or a Scientific Approach to Changing the World. And I'm going to read a substantive passage from this because it concentrates a great deal of what has plagued the millions of progressive people from acting in the way they should to drive this regime from power, and that has tremendous implications for the future. So I'm reading from his essay from early in the COVID crisis, April 2nd, I believe. Even as people in the medical field are proceeding on the basis of a scientific approach, and in the context of the coronavirus crisis, liberals are insisting that it is vitally important now to listen to the scientists. For far too long, many liberals and progressives have allowed themselves to become paralyzed by a relativist agnosticism, lacking, even rejecting the very idea of certitude, with ridiculous notions like, quote, how can you know what is really true? No one can say that their truth is greater than someone else's truth, and so on. Meanwhile, fascist forces, marked by a truly Dark Ages mentality, and firmly convinced of the truth of all manner of lunatic conspiracy theories promoting fascist values and objectives, are eagerly embracing callous Philistinism, willfully rejecting critical thinking, smugly ignoring, defying, and denigrating science and the scientific method. Put another way, in terms of major trends in society as a whole, those who have the most certitude are those who are the most out of touch with reality. And he goes on to say, further complicating the situation, and an additional dimension to this problem, is the fact that although they do not share, but strongly oppose the values and objectives of the fascists, many of the basic masses who are bitterly oppressed under this system are also suspicious of and are even inclined to reject science and scientifically grounded analysis. But this also leaves you vulnerable to all kinds of unfounded conspiracy theories and other wrong and harmful ideas, including the notion that nothing people do will make a difference because it is all in God's hands. End quote. All of this written in April has tremendous relevance right now. Look, there's great danger and no way forward for the interests of humanity in a society, in a culture of competing stories or narratives where you have your narrative and she has hers and I have mine. Look, we have different experiences, and those experiences and knowledge of them can contribute to our understanding of the world that we live in. But to understand the world, you need a scientific understanding that starts from the fact that there is only one reality that has many layers and complexity, but there is one objective world. Science means gathering the evidence and seeking the patterns in that evidence to reveal the connections and the pathways to identifying and understanding the underlying causes that give rise to the evidence, and then developing the ways to act on that reality. And this is true whether you are a scientist trying to discover the antibodies to prevent the spread of COVID, as Phil was talking about, or to save the environment, or you are applying the scientific method to overcome the exploitation and oppression, the wars and the divisions that so plague humanity today and themselves cause the lives of hundreds of millions of people. In this article, though, Bob Avakian goes on to say this, quote, the truth of something does not depend on who says it, or how it makes you feel. Because something comes from a source you like does not make it true. And because something comes from a source you do not like does not make it untrue. And truth is not a popularity contest. Because a lot of people believe something does not make it true, And because only a few people believe something does not make it untrue. Truth is objective, which means whether something is true or not depends on whether or not it corresponds to actual reality. And he goes on to say, quote, to sort out what is false from what is true and to stand on solid ground in terms of understanding things, you need a scientific method and approach to reality, and yes, scientifically grounded certitude, where such certitude can and must be established, end quote. So for just a brief example of how we can apply science to society, and I'm going to compress here, how can we say, as we have, and I have said many times on the show, and Bob Avakian has written, that there is a straight line from the Confederacy to the fascism of the Trump-Pence regime? Well, by tracing its development in the history of the U.S., beginning with slavery written into the U.S. founding documents, by going deeper into its centrality of slavery and the oppression of black people to the development of the wealth in the U.S. from the 17th up to and through the 20th century. The history of the betrayal of Reconstruction that ushered in the era of lynching and Jim Crow, through the current era of the new Jim Crow, where the police play the role of the KKK, and now the open white supremacy that was evidenced in the attempt of the Trump-Pence regime to discard the millions of urban black votes in cities that voted for Biden. And look, there's much more that I could go into here, but the point is, just as in the natural world, you go to the evidence, in this case, the history and the underlying economic and political forces that drive this white supremacy. And all of this is available in great detail and depth on the website in articles and films from Bob Avakian and articles from revcom.us, our website. This scientific method is at the heart of the work of Bob Avakian and is the defining character of his leadership. Bob Avakian, BA, has qualitatively developed the science of communism, the science of revolution, to chart the path to the emancipation of all humanity. And think about what it would mean if under a totally different system that didn't set people against each other just to survive and how that shapes people's thinking today, but instead there was a shared epistemology basing our lives and decisions on a collective process of discovering and acting on what was actually true. That would require a whole different system for that to be in effect. But imagine how different that would be. This is, as Bob Avakian has said, is what is needed to get to a world beyond where might makes right, which is what prevails in the world today. This is expressed in both Bob Avakian's personal character, and it is a hallmark of the principles of the new communism, which completely repudiate the notion that the ends justify the means, and that truth is just an instrument of desired objectives rather than what it actually is, a correct reflection of objective reality. To all who reject the anti-science of the Trump-Pence fascist regime and the dangerous movement they have forged all the way up to the highest reaches of government, including dominating now the Supreme Court, this talk that I'm giving is a challenge and an invitation to you to be consistent and principled in your recognition of the importance of science and to apply it not just where you feel comfortable in the prevention and curing of COVID, but as Bob Avakian concludes in this same article, quote, follow the truth where it leads, particularly when it comes to historical, social, and political questions. Because where it leads is to demolishing cherished ideals and prejudices of liberals regarding the actual role of this great American democracy through its history and throughout the world, the actual nature of the system we live under, capitalism, imperialism, and the actual experience of the revolutionary struggle against this system, and more particularly, the experience of the communist movement and the socialist societies it has brought into being, end quote. I conclude with this, a better world is possible. There is a way that everyone can be part of knowing and changing the world, in opposing the fascism of the Trump-Pence regime, and even more fundamentally, in making a radical leap beyond this capitalist imperialist system, which has given rise to this fascism, and bringing it to being a far better world. You need the scientific method and approach of the new communism.
Somebody asked, could you speak to how we might best understand the safety of the vaccine? Not just immediately, but in the long run. But I wanted to also bring out that so many people, I mean, really millions of people in this country actually don't know how to evaluate what's true. They don't know how to evaluate evidence. And if you spend some time with these conspiracy theories, they're actually throwing out what they're calling evidence. So we have the alternative facts, you have their proof. Alex Jones did this all the time. He's got proof. But people don't actually know how to evaluate whether what's being presented is true or not. How do we help?
Yeah, well, look, the point is not that everybody becomes an astrophysicist or a surgeon or a molecular biologist, but there's some basic things about science. And I would recommend to people, this is available online. It's also available from Revolution Books online, a book called Science and Revolution on the importance of science and the application of science to society, the new synthesis of communism and the leadership of Bob Avakian by Ardea Skybreak, who was trained as an evolutionary biologist. And, you know, she quotes Neil deGrasse Tyson in the beginning that science allows you to confront and identify problems, to recognize problems and figure out how to solve them rather than to run away from them. And as I said, a point that she makes in this book as well, that if you don't have a scientific approach to reality, you are a mark for any charlatan, of whether it's a charlatan doctor or a political leader or whatever. You have no way to judge anything. Now, the point is, you know, if you sent me two sets of data on the different ways to manipulate RNA, I wouldn't be able to do very much with it. I don't have that training. But I think, you know, a scientific approach is something that people can learn. Well, one, it's not just who has, you know, let's look up, did they go to Harvard Medical School or did they go to a medical school someplace else? That's not what impresses me. It's it matters. It's part of the picture, I suppose. But what is the basic argument? What is a consensus of people in a field? Are they saying, could they be wrong? Yes. Is it possible that, and it's actually quite likely that in every field, people are influenced by the prevailing social relations. So there's been tremendous, tremendous racism in the field of medicine, which since the 1960s has begun. There's been struggle over this thing. You know, there's Doctors Without Borders was formed at a certain point in the last several decades, where people are trying to cooperate, where we're looking into things, where things like the Tuskegee experiment have been exposed and revealed. And these are important things, but you have to look at the entirety of it and get out of this way that, you know, these conspiracy theories is that they take random sets of facts and they throw them at people and say, well, there's the evidence. You know, this letter that we got at Refuse Fascism said, well, the corporations make they planned COVID because Naomi Klein says that there's disaster capitalism. That means the capitalists profit off of these crises. Therefore, they must have created this. You see, it seems logical, but it's illogical. Where did this come from? How did it develop? You know, these are the kinds of things that have to be asked, and historians have to ask it too. And I, you know, you look at, got to go to multiple sources. There's things you can learn, just for example, from original sources. It's really important what people on the street say about different things, but then you need a lot of that data to be able to figure out whether it's actually true, you know, and then you need people who do have had the privilege of education and a scientific method, and you need to learn from them. We're at the very beginning historically of humanity actually being able to practice science. In fact, I think it's probably still true that that there's more scientists alive today than there were in the history of humanity up to this point. You know, at least that was true a few years ago. Maybe that's no longer the case. But each year, but the fact is, it's new. It comes with, that's part of the development of the, you know, all the factories and technologies and that we have is all relatively new, and capital that arose along with capitalism. And our contention, my contention, is that the capitalism at this point is a tremendous barrier to that being able to be both to really flourish and to be able to incorporate the creativity of the masses of people, whether it be in medicine, in the treatment of people in the hospital, or more importantly, or just as important, is the prevention of disease. You know, people much malign what was going on in China before it was capitalism was reestablished in the late 70s, mid-70s. But they had these barefoot doctors, and they prevented tremendous number of diseases by relying on the peasants themselves and teaching them in basic hygiene and how to drain swamps and all kinds of things. There's a tremendous knowledge that people have. Native peoples have tremendous knowledge in herbs and different kinds of things that has to then be combined with scientific knowledge of the molecular structure of these things and how they can be manipulated and used. So there's anybody can learn some basic ways of saying, what's the evidence for it? You read an article, what's the evidence? Does it add up? And what then, and you should turn to varying sources to be able to find out, read a dissenting opinion, you know, but pretty much people go along in this society with what the crowd wants. There's a great play that I would recommend if people want to understand the negative process called The Crucible by a playwright named Arthur Miller that was written about the during the anti-communist scare of the early 50s, but it uses the Salem witch trials at the foundation, the formation of, in New England in the 17th century. So anyway, that's just some stuff.
Watch and share the full forum by visiting refusefascism.org. Thanks for listening to Inside Without Now. There's still time to place the winning bid on arts, crafts, and virtual classes at the Artists, Designers, and Makers Refuse Fascism Auction. View the selection and place your bid at refusefascism.org. For the latest, be sure to subscribe to the show, and please rate and review to help us reach more listeners. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. Trump Pence, out now. As always, stay safe, not silent, and I'll see you in the streets.